Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
College football's version of a government shutdown would look like, and I don't fully know what it looks like, kids, but whatever it is, we may get close to it this week. A lot of things going on, some of it you care about, some of it you don't. All of it we'll talk about tonight. Jam-packed show, high atop a sun-soaked downtown Nashville, Tennessee, late kick live for Sunday night, March 10th, the year of our Lord, 2024. The Oscars, ignorant enough to go head-to-head with us yet again, and yet again, Monday morning, we'll bring headlines of their lowest-rated show in the past who knows how many decades. Our balls were in their court, and this is what they did with them. Anyway, as far as college football is concerned, big things happening this week. And unlike some of the bureaucratic stuff that's been happening behind the scenes that won't ever impact your life, this stuff will impact your life. That's why I'm going to take time to talk about it tonight. Alabama recruiting, not dead after all, it seems. We will discuss. I got some stuff on Napier at Florida. I want to know from you, not my opinion, I want your opinion on who the most hated teams in this sport are. It certainly changes by decade. Like Miami would have been a shoo-in to be number one on this list in the 1990s. Are they up there now? Could they be up there again at some point? So we will discuss all that. We got a jam-packed show tonight. I even got some Heisman stuff towards the end. I'm talking best running back rooms. Like, we got a jam-packed show. You'd never know it was March, and you'd certainly not know it's the offseason because it doesn't exist. They're watching us in York, South Carolina, Shreveport, Louisiana, Norwalk, Ohio, Valentine, Nebraska. Thank you guys so much. If you're listening on podcasts, thank you for that. Wherever you are, however you access the show, the only thing I need you to do is check and make sure you're subscribed, and then go on about your day. Let's dive in. Really big week in college football coming up, so I need to warn you, a lot of drama's coming, and a lot of gaslighting's coming, because whatever a college football government shutdown would look like, we're going to get as close as we'll ever get to it this week. There are a lot of deadlines on the table towards the end of the week. There's a lot of stuff that's supposed to have already been sorted out, and it's not. So we've got this self-imposed deadline coming up, and we do not have a college football playoff format agreed upon, which is important because only the next 2 years have been agreed upon now. Also, not as important to you and I, but way more important to the folks in this room, there is no agreement on revenue distribution. Now, it probably is not going to be a great big shock to you that Ross Dellinger of Yahoo reported Friday that the college football playoff negotiations are taking a backseat to revenue distribution. As our players, as our fans, but I'm not here to bemoan the plight of the player and fan tonight because we long since stopped being at the forefront of these conversations. So we do still have a vested interest. Emotionally, we have an interest in what's about to go down here. So Ross Dellinger has done a great job on this, and I would highly encourage you, if you don't already have those alerts set, set them for this week because there could be a lot going down. Wink, wink, nod, nod. So everyone in the industry expects this to be a pretty explosive week. That's why I'm leading with it. I don't know that there is consensus at all in the industry as to which direction we're going to go. Now, I've shared some thoughts with you. let me get you up to speed if you have no idea where we are, and let me tell you what I think is about to happen. So essentially, the Big Ten and the SEC are as gargantuan and disproportionately stronger than college football as they've ever been. That figures to only increase as college conference realignment continues. So once upon a time, for a long time, that college football playoff existed, much to the chagrin of some of us. And then the revenue was evenly distributed, and you did get more if you had certain teams make it, but like by and large, the conferences got even revenue distribution. Well, the Big Ten and the SEC have come to the table, and according to Ross Dellinger's reporting Friday, they have suggested slash demanded a disproportionately weighted revenue distribution model where they would bring home 58% of the combined college football playoff revenue. The ACC and the Big 12 would bring in a combined 31% of the college football playoff revenue. And then the final 10 to 11% would go to a combination of Notre Dame and the G5 schools. Here are your scraps. And so what's going to happen is the billion-dollar question in the room. As one administrator put it, quote, "Would the power to really leave if we said no?" That's the elephant in the room. That's the big fear, not just amongst administrators, but amongst a lot of you, is you're scared that you're about to see a world where the Big Ten and the SEC throw their hands up and they just take their ball and they go play elsewhere, and they got a couple of major media partners in line to help distribute all of that. And you should be scared about that, because I think that is a very real possibility, if that is a fear of yours. So here comes the kicker. Here's the kicker in all this. Not only are they asking for more money than everyone else for playing the same game, which is understandable in a true free market system because they bring more to the table. Therefore, they are saying, hey, 72% of this thing's been comprised of our teams. We should make more. Hey, we got the most valuable brands. We should make more. This is why some of us around here, who may be free market in our generic lives, have looked at college football and said, stop throwing that term around. You don't want that in college sports, because if you get what you think you want in college sports, if you really saw the free market operate in college athletics, it would be an utter disaster. It would be very violent, and a lot of you wouldn't make it. So now we're exploring that route, and now you're finding out why some of us who may heavily lean that direction in other walks of life, not necessarily lean in that direction in college athletics, for the same reason that I don't think the general law of the land should preside over nature preserves, because if it did, the nature preserve wouldn't exist. So here's the kicker, okay? So Ross Dellinger Friday, Yahoo Sports, reports that there's a proposal being circulated, or socialized, which is the buzzword of the year, where the SEC and the Big Ten would take home 58% of the playoff revenue, and then the other two would take home 31%, and then the rest of it would be distributed amongst the G5. But the kicker is that, quote, "The concept of guaranteed first-round buys for the SEC and Big Ten received enough pushback that it's been tabled." You remember when we talked about this last week? Remember just last week, there was a proposal being quote-unquote socialized and pushed around where the SEC and the Big Ten had come to the table and said, hey, if we have a playoff with a couple of first-round buys, we want those to be ours. Guaranteed, before the season even starts, we know our champion is going to have a first-round buy. Of course, everyone pushed back on that. They were supposed to, which is what I told you was going to happen last week. The SEC and the Big Ten never came to the negotiating table actually expecting that to get any support. They wanted pushback on it. They wanted it to get tabled so that they then could come back to the table last week and say, all right, if you're not going to give us that, Overton window, if you're not going to give us that, at least give us a disproportionate amount of the revenue, since after all, we do carry a lion's share of the major brands in this sport. We do feature a lion's share of the teams who have made the playoff. That's also not supposed to work. Just a little FYI on how this is working behind the scenes. That's also not supposed to gain any traction. That's also supposed to get shot down so that those magic two words that I told you they're longing to float in the room all the while can be floated. And that is, we tried. You shot down our first round buy proposal. We compromised a bastardization of the word itself, and we said, oh, we just want most of the money then. Not to mention, we're already going to get most of the media rights money because our contracts are gigantic compared to what you guys are going to bring home, and then you're going to push back on that as well. Well, we'll just go play our own game then. We tried. We tried to work with you guys. Remember, the quote from the unnamed administrator in the Dellinger piece, would the power to really leave if we say no to this? Yes, they would. I fully believe they would. I fully believe that over here, just off camera, there's a plan in place and has been for quite a while that kind of is like a working model of what that world would look like. And I guarantee you that officials from both of those conferences know all too well how they'd like that to operate. I will guarantee you university presidents have probably been read in on that, and I guarantee you television executives are way down the road in mapping that out. The reason I know that is because there are certain entities you have to have on board before you ever even broach that, and enough of them watch the program that I've been able to talk to some of them. That stuff's happening. That stuff's already happened, and it's not necessarily that it should be a surprise to you. It's just that it's one thing to be sitting out in a canoe with your buddies fishing on a Saturday afternoon saying, man, I bet they're doing this, I bet they're doing that. It's another thing to have people in the game tell you, yeah, we're doing it. That doesn't mean anything's happened, mind you. I'm just telling you, if your fear is we play hardball with the SEC and Big Ten, we're scared they may go and do their own thing, you should be scared about that. Not only are they ready to do that, I think there are a lot of people in those rooms motivated to do that. So there was one more quote that I wanted to read you, which I think is all the way at the back of my stack, because I want to remind you one more thing. And this is why this week's so big. As all this is going on, you also have that small little matter of the ACC on wobbly legs as a conference. Ross Dellinger, in this same piece that he put out Friday detailing this, also included a little nugget that I don't want you to overlook at the back end, because it's something I've alluded to, and now he's flat out written it, and it sounds like this. While ESPN's contract with the ACC extends through 2036, the network, listen closely, has the option to opt out of the final 9 years starting in 2027, a way that ESPN itself could reopen the grant of rights or at the very least restructure the deal. I'm going to keep reading, but I think your ears have already perked up. Could a restructured deal with uneven distribution prevent more departures? Would an ESPN opt-out swing open the door for more schools to exit? Here's the final sentence. The network must exercise that option by February of 2025. So you see, while these dates sound like they're a little ways down the road, the decisions have to be made from this week until next February. All this stuff has to happen. Now, reading between the lines, what I have tried to hint to you for about 2 months on this matter is there's always been the ability on ESPN side, because it was known within media circles, some media circles, I guess, that ESPN had that mechanism baked into their very grant of rights that they have with the ACC, that they could just void the thing. They can opt out of it after the 2026-2027 season, and they've got to decide by 2025. And what would that mean? What it would mean is Florida State's in court right now. They're trying to get out of the ACC. Boom. They could be gone, and ESPN could free them. Now, the thinking, if you move down the road a mile or two, is if there's a world over here where the SEC and the Big Ten may venture out and do their own thing, and they certainly would have a media partner in their pocket, namely ESPN, if they did such things. And then over here, ESPN also controls the ability to free up very valuable assets like an FSU, like a Clemson, like a North Carolina, like a Miami. Might that television partner exercise that right so that more valuable assets could be available for this partner they have over here to scoop up? I'm ESPN. I've already got the SEC. I've got the rights of Clemson, FSU, North Carolina, Miami in my back pocket. Why don't I just pull this lever, free them up so that they can navigate their way over here to this other conference that's worth a lot more anyway? Not that all of them would, but you better believe at least one or two of them would. shady games can be played. In times like these, shady, shady games can be played. So this is college football's version of like a threatened government shutdown. In reality, if Friday comes and goes and there's no decision, it's not going to impact you. Like, no one really cares. Essential services will still be provided. Spring practice will still go on. Spring games will still be played. But there's a line in the sand here, and there are some very powerful people who I don't think are balking. I think they're ready to walk away if the time comes. And to be honest with you, I don't know what that world looks like. No one does. We've never done it before. No one knows what that world looks like. But, man, we're on the precipice. We're on the brink. Frankly, I'm just tired. I'm ready to be done talking about certain portions of this because it seems like it's gone on forever. All right, let's move it along. Happy to have you with us on this Sunday evening. Let's talk happy thoughts. Let's talk football. You know, dare we? Dare I talk about actual college football? Yeah, it's what we do on this show when at all possible. So we had a question that I think we need to go ahead and broach, and I got my papers all out of order, but you'll notice, let me just read the question and then I'll get to what you should notice. So Fred down in Gulfport, Mississippi said, how successful do you think DeBoer will be recruiting in the SEC? Well, Fred, the reason that we picked this out of the mailbag today is because has anyone noticed that bright blinking light over Tuscaloosa? Any of you who follow recruiting probably do. All of a sudden, it seems that the claims that Alabama recruiting was going to disappear into the abyss post-Nick Saban have been greatly exaggerated. Now, I've got some friends and acquaintances who were taking that five steps further, and they're just claiming Bama recruiting, sustained powerhouse, Nick Saban who? Like, let's not go that far, please. Let's pump the brakes. Let's calm them just a tad. But there's something undeniable. I know a lot of you aren't paying attention to recruiting in March, and candidly, I don't blame you. But that's what I'm here for. So this is not going to be an in-depth, in-the-weeds recruiting segment, but I'm just here to tell you there is undeniable momentum, ton of it, with Alabama recruiting. They've landed a couple of four-star kids this past week, had dozens and dozens of high-profile kids on campus over the past week. Ball's rolling there now. So I'll go back when he got hired. When Kalen DeBoer got hired, I told you a couple of really, really big mistruths were being spread. The first was, without Nick Saban, the Bama discount was gone, and Bama couldn't keep up in NIL, which was only partially right. The Saban discount evaporated the day Nick Saban retired. And that was just, Bama didn't ever have to pay for kids in NIL like other schools did because kids were willing to take a huge discount. Because the exchange was, I get to play for Nick Saban. Well, once Nick Saban retires, didn't really matter who you bring in. It's going to be tit for tat. It's going to be oranges to oranges, apples to apples warfare out there in the NIL streets, and you better be able to match dollars or come close to it, or you're not going to get the caliber player that you were getting. Well, the thought was, Saban's no longer there. You're going to have to play that game. That's true. But the follow-up was, and Alabama can't afford to. Big difference, kids, in Alabama not having had to play that game versus they are poverty and unable to play that game. That thing got taken way too far. And I can confidently tell you, when it comes blank cutting time in the NIL game, Bama will be able to match. Don't you worry about that. Bama will be able to match. So if they're getting outspent on kids, it's because they self-imposed a limit that they probably weren't willing to go past, which happens not just with them, but with a lot of established programs all the time. Like, you don't think Georgia gets to a certain point with kids, and once the dollar figure gets too big, says, nah, we're good. Happens all the time. Happens all the time. That's the nature of establishment versus desperation. But I'm telling you, if you thought Saban walks out the door and Bama just wades in poverty and has to take other team scraps, that's never going to happen. That was never going to happen. So it's not a surprise that they're gaining a lot of traction with high-level players. The second thing that was blown way out of proportion is the theory that Kalen DeBoer was not going to be able to keep up in the SEC recruiting lanes because of what he did at Washington. Folks quickly pulled up 247sports.com. Let me look at Washington's national recruiting rankings under Kalen DeBoer. There was nothing to write home about. And then people said, well, that's the caliber player he was getting there. That effort's not going to work down here. And I said, yeah, it will. He'll recruit fine at Alabama. To which people came back at me and said, well, Josh, are you saying that he's going to be different at Alabama. I'm not telling you he's going to be different at all. I'm telling you his results are going to be different. Like, I'm a believer, just for example, that there are people born in Kearney, Nebraska every year who have whatever DNA it is that it takes to be an elite surfer, but they probably spend 0 minutes per year on the board. The reason is because there is no beachfront property in Kearney, Nebraska. So unless they're moving, that time is wasted trying to learn to surf in Nebraska. Doesn't mean it's not built into them to be that. Just means their surroundings dictate, probably not worth your time. Well, Kalen DeBoer was at Washington. There are 200 kids that he has a shot at the moment he took the Bama job just because of the script A on his chest now and his pinpoint on a map that he never would have been able to get at Washington, probably couldn't have gotten a visit at Washington, and would have been a waste of time to invest a whole lot of energy in at Washington. What I have told you and what I'll continue to tell you is there is a myth about recruiting in the South, and that is that you have to be injected with this special kind of DNA, or you have to be from down here, or else you're not going to make it. Well, that's been dispelled before, and people get amnesia and forget about it. The formula for successfully recruiting the SEC is, number one, you better have enough money. Number two, you better work relentlessly. And number three, you better know people, which is backwards from the emphasis that most people place on that. Most people place the emphasis on know instead of people. You better know people. As if there's some secret underground network of connections you have down here. You develop the connections. Saban wasn't from down here. Urban Meyer wasn't from down here. Man, they learned to recruit the South really quick. It's because they had the backing. It's because they worked relentlessly. And it's because they knew people. They knew how to connect with people. The only difference with DeBoer is, unlike the two I just mentioned, he's unproven at the highest level. And number two, you look at him and he seems very docile, very nice, very serene, no profanity. Is that guy really that intense? Well, open the hood on him. Translation, talk to people who have been around him when there aren't cameras present, when there aren't live mics present. And they'll tell you, yeah, that's a different cat. And he's got exactly what it takes to recruit down here. Always has. They're not going to have a problem recruiting in Alabama. Now, I said this when he got hired and got yelled at in the comments section. So I'm not telling you that he's proven me right here. He's going to, but he hasn't proven me right here. So benefit of the doubt. It's early in the 2025 cycle. It's just March. All they've done is landed a couple of kids. It's not like it was last minute back and forth knife fight on the trail with Ohio State and Georgia for him. They will get into those situations and they will win their fair share of battles. Not all of them, but I'm also going to leave you with this. If we establish that Kalen DeBoer's tactical skills are top-notch, if we establish that game day-wise, he's an excellent coach. I mean, undefeated against Lanning, undefeated against Sark, wasn't he, Belichick? So he's beaten the big boys with lesser talented rosters. If we establish that, what do we need him to do at Alabama? What do we need him to land top three classes? Do we need him to land top 10 classes? I would argue if he floats in that 5 to 10 range, they'll be plenty good enough. They'll be plenty good enough to beat anyone they play. If it's better than that, it's an added bonus. So they're going to be fine there. It was one of the most overblown stories when he got there was, oh, SEC recruiting about to swallow Kalen DeBoer up. I said the day he got hired, and I will restate, I think the SEC is about to learn a whole lot more about Kalen DeBoer than he's going to learn about the SEC. And he's learning a healthy amount about the SEC. I just think that probably chapters to that DeBoer at Alabama book that are going to be written a little bit differently than folks predicted when he first got there. All right, let's move on, because this is a very healthy exercise that we're about to undergo. When I was sitting in my office today, like I normally do, I was watching women's college basketball, whoomst amongst us, right? So I was watching South Carolina, I was watching LSU, and they had a little dust up. You know, a couple of fans hopped onto the court, like, it's March. And then everyone got in a little uproar about it, and people were questioning the integrity of the game, and what does this mean for the game? And I'm over there like, it's pretty healthy to have this. Heupel and Eli Drinkwitz going back and forth in the SEC, it's okay. It's okay if you have a fight every now and then. It's okay if coaches don't love each other. That's okay. It's competition. You don't get the highest levels of competition without some healthy amounts of hatred seeping into the room. Not real hatred. It's not like you're wishing harm on anyone, but competitively, within the world of sports, We have this world. We have a world on a football field where you can do things on Saturday to another person that would land you behind bars if you did it on the street. That's a wonderful thing. Everyone consents. Everyone signs up for it. You know what you're getting into. Even by today's rules, defensively, you can still do some pretty ugly things to people. Well, you can also say things and think things and feel things that you don't need to be feeling in your normal life, but this is sports, so it's okay. It's okay.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Now, with that in mind, earlier today, I took it upon myself. Colin, here's a good endpoint for you. After I take a sip from this chalice, here's a good endpoint. So earlier today, I was feeling the hate. And I asked you guys, who do you think the most hated teams in this sport are? I don't really care what your metrics are. I don't care what your criteria is. Who are the most hated teams in this sport? And boy, it took off. And a lot of you said Notre Dame. And I got several teams here, and I got my own feelings on this. But a lot of you said Notre Dame. I think that's partially fueled by the independent status. And you're aggravated that they get treated differently than everyone else. Now, my counter to that is I know a lot of my audience is younger. You guys probably weren't around in the 80s, but it may shock you to learn if you went back there, a whole lot of these teams were independent. A whole lot of them were. Like, go look at the national champions. Look at the conferences they played in. You'll find a lot of them were independent. The Notre Dame take on all of that is, hold on, you're criticizing us for being independent. We're not the ones who changed. You guys changed. All of you caved, and now you're criticizing us because we held firm. I feel the same way about the Rose Bowl, by the way. They get special media treatment, probably a source of a lot of the hatred. Now, I can't deny that. They get talked a lot about on this show. They get talked a lot about nationally. Now, where I do disagree is when folks start calling them overrated, and I've done that segment already. When you talk about their weak strength of schedule, it's statistically, it's just false. But nevertheless, people feel it. So yeah, Notre Dame's actually got to be on that list no matter how you slice it. Michigan, though. Michigan was one of the most popular submissions today. A lot of folks hate Michigan. A lot of Michigan hate out there. Ironically, I've been accused of it, and I actually don't feel it. I know my heart. I don't feel it. Hold on. No, I don't feel it. But a lot of you do. Now, I'm a believer that this was born a lot within the past 12 to 24 months. Not all of it. Some of you have always hated Michigan, but I think a lot of you have come to hate Michigan. And whenever in the past Michigan's name was thrown in the elite conversation, A lot of you who don't particularly like them, you always got to point to the ring finger because they didn't have any. In at least this generation, they didn't have any. Well, then they won a national title last year, and a lot of you think they did it very underhandedly. I know what the pushback is from Michigan circles. I'm speaking for the masses. Okay, you can't deny a lot of them think you cheated your way to a title or you cheated in the process of winning a title, whether it was legit at the end or not, like a lot of people think that. So that's a source of the hatred. But also, they just shut down one of your most popular talking points. That's really why you hate it. You hate it because if you're an Ohio State fan, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you got to, for a long time, look at them when they ran their mouth and say, what do you have to show for it? What have you won? Where are your rings? I'm looking at the trophy case over here. That thing looks like it's from the 90s. Oh, because it is? And then all of a sudden they win one. They win one doing it a different way than you thought college football had dictated it had to be done. So you can't use that anymore. Can't use it. You can throw an asterisk in their face if you want to. NCAA will ultimately rule on that, or will they, since they've paused operation, essentially. So Michigan, yes, they're up there. Alabama, like, yes, obviously. Alabama's been the answer to who is the most hated team in college football for the better part of two decades now, thanks to Nick Saban. I think in his latter years, a lot more people came to have a healthy amount of respect for the run he had been on, but that didn't mean they didn't hate Alabama. Like, I get the opportunity to go to any game I want to every weekend. So I've been in the building on the road when they've gone into an opposing team's venue. It is crazy. It's got to be like the NBA equivalent of when LA comes to town or like Dallas in the NFL. It's pretty wild. And it's like that for all the big teams. But Bama under Nick Saban was like a different level of, it's like watching the Yankees go on the road. Like that's kind of what it was like in terms of road atmospheres. And I got to see a lot of them. But really, it all boiled down to winning. Like, that's all it boiled down to. One team wins a whole lot. And as a result, you start convincing yourself, well, the sport's tilted in their favor. Well, the sport's tilted in a lot of teams' favors. Sport's been tilted in Texas's favor for a long time. Sport's been tilted, I would argue, the entire ACC outside of Clemson has underachieved for a long time. So it's not just that it was tilted in their favor. It was that it was tilted in their favor. Then they took advantage of it. Then it became really tilted in their favor. Yes, that's hateable. I could see absolutely how that would be hated. Speaking of the Longhorns, I was not going to get too far down this list without Texas being on the very, very short list of hated teams in college football. You know, I got two thoughts on this. The first one is I do understand, in my world, I understand why I and many other people talk about Texas a lot because of what the traffic does when we talk about them. But there's an accusation that gets thrown out a lot about Texas, and that is we all, you know, this is what is used. Well, we all build Texas up. Well, we all overrate Texas. Well, not everyone's done that. I don't think the words Texas is back came out of my mouth until last year. Don't quote me on that. I would be willing to have someone research that. All our shows are public. But, like, I didn't participate in all that. But I also didn't do the whole Texas sucks, the sports passed them by, they're the most overrated program in history, they're a shell of what you claim they are. Those were the extremes. In the middle was and always will be a program that, if operating at peak efficiency, would be the superpower of college football. That's always been the case. And there have been a lot of internal reasons why they haven't been able to reach that summit. And they're not there now. They're as close as they've been in a long time, but they're still not there. I had a guy say, you know, I wish I could buy Texas for what they're worth and sell them for what they think they're worth. And I love that. I love that because that's an old Meemawism. I loved that. So, I mean, Longhorn Network, I think that has a chapter in the book of why Texas is so hated, but just the overall self-importance. Like, I know what you guys are talking about. I love Texas because Texas has been good to me, but I know what you guys are talking about. Ohio State's the same reason. Ohio State's also on this list. But I will tell you what the whole college football playoffification of college football has done. I had someone tell me earlier today, Ohio State, they got to be the most hated team in college football. And I was going back and forth with some folks, and he was one of them. And I said, why? Out of curiosity. He said, well, they're the most overrated team in America. And I said, how's that? He said, well, they've only won two national titles this millennium. And that is not the flex you think it is. If you're winning, on average, one national championship about every 12 years, historically, you're at the very top of the sport. This is where Bama and Nick Saban kind of ruined things, because it threw so out of whack what proper perspective on college football is. Ohio State has two titles this millennium. That's actually a positive. It's not a negative. And they've played for more than that. They've won two titles. And also, they've been in the hunt almost every year. There have only been a couple of years where they weren't in the hunt. Not because media fantasized it, because they recruited, developed, had rock-solid culture and stability, and there were some hiccups along the way, but it never derailed them. It was just a brief volume down, volume right back up the next year. They've always been in the hunt. So if you're always there and you afford yourself the ability to take a swing in November every year, you'll land some, you'll miss more than you land, because it's really hard to win at the highest levels. But man, like, if you hate them because they're Ohio State, okay. If you think Ryan Day got handed a job and displays an attitude that's not quite in line with what he's worked to earn, if you think that, okay. If you're a Michigan fan, you just hate him because you were born, okay. But the whole overrated thing, you know, I most of the time disagree when programs are being called that, especially when you're in the hunt every year. So, yeah, part of that's valid, and the other part I could do without. USC and Oregon, I think, belong in the same box here. So USC, once upon a time, was right there. USC under Pete Carroll was right there. And let me tell you, as I've told you many times, I was a kid in the South as that run was going on. And it was, they hated USC in the South more than a lot of teams hated their rival. Because they looked at their rival and they thought, hey, man, at least we both got that SEC bumper sticker on our pickup. Those folks out there, they're wearing sunglasses, getting off the bus. They got celebrities at practice. Hollywood and college football aren't supposed to mix. You got Snoop Dogg. Who's that? He's running routes out here. Pete Carroll let him do what? That would never fly down here. Man, if they had to play SEC football, they'd have a bloody lip and they'd have a lesson to take back to L.A. Oh, what? They just shut out Auburn and Jordan-Hare Stadium? Well, that sucks. Yeah, that used to be USC. Not so much anymore. Could be again, not so much anymore. Oregon has never been hated nationally. Oregon, I think, in a lot of cases, has been a lot of folks' second favorite team for a long time. But that's because Oregon has not become a true national championship superpower. But if they did, I think Oregon would rocket up the list of most hated teams in America. Because all of a sudden, that association with Nike would start to be viewed through a different lens. All these other Nike schools would look and say, whoa. So we've got a licensing deal with the swoosh over there as well. How come this team, just because they're Phil Knight U up in his backyard up there, how come they get so disproportionately propped up? And you'd also look and you'd probably hear Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning doesn't shy away from many mics and many cameras, as you've noticed. And that doesn't rub you the wrong way when you're playing from an underdog role. Or when you're playing Colorado, because a lot of you dislike Deion as well. But man, if they start to have the bully pulpit, if they start to have success in the playoff, especially the expanded area or era, and especially if they win a title, that'll start to rub some folks the wrong way. And they'd love it. They would breathe it in like oxygen. But that could happen. So USC just returning to their former glory, or Oregon ascending to that for the first time, they would be hated. Miami, I mean, right now is not on this list nearly as much as they would have been a generation ago. Miami at one point was the number one most hated team in America by a mile. Miami was so hated that it made American college football fans actively root for Alabama in a national title game against them. It made college football Americans root for Notre Dame. Things that once upon a time these people swore they'd never do. Miami created such a monster that it was like, the enemy of my friend is my what? What's happening right now? Did I just say Roll Tide? Did I just say Go Irish? You did when they played Miami. That's how crazy college football got for a little while, and how upside down and on its ear Miami turned college football. Now, they're not there now, and you tear down the Orange Bowl and you go an extended period without any kind of postseason success, and people start to question whether you'll ever be there again. Which is totally fair. I don't even try and silence that, because I wonder right along with you guys. All I'm here to tell you is in a hypothetical world, if they get there again, we would have the, in some cases, the pleasure, or in some cases, the horror, depending on your perspective, of seeing a whole new generation of people from Virginia to Nevada and everywhere in between discover, wow, I, like my forefathers, also have a hatred for Miami that I never knew existed. And lastly, I'm not even going to say Colorado here. I'm just going to say Deion. Deion Sanders, wherever he goes, if Deion wins, if they go above 500 and surprise people this year, wherever he is down the road, if he starts winning, legitimately being in the playoff conversation, you haven't seen hatred like that. Now, I think it'll be misplaced in a lot of cases because it won't be because of Deion himself. Rather, it'll be because of what we call the Deion tax, which is this ridiculous hype balloon that cannot help but follow Deion Sanders because he transcends college football. He's bigger than college football. Folks who don't watch a single game all year know who Deion Sanders is. They don't know who Shane Beamer is. College football fans do. So because of that, everything he does gets attention, and a lot of it is outside attention, which is good for your marketing department, but it's terrible for diehard fans because you have to listen to Access Hollywood talk about college football. It's almost as bad as watching the NFL draft guys talk about college football. Here's this white kid from Georgia. He's a pretty good receiver. His name's Ladd McConkey. Yeah, we've watched him for like half a decade. You just found out about him, huh? Well, Deion Sanders, we're watching him every week. Like we've known about him since the early 90s, but all of a sudden, folks are discovering him for the first time, and they're talking about college football intelligence-wise on a one level, and we're hopefully up here at the 8 or 9 level. That's the Deion tax. And because of the Deion tax, you're going to take that out, not on the media, but on Deion. And so Deion will be hated no matter where he goes. I don't think he's bothered by it, but that's coming. It's already here. You saw it last year, but especially if they start winning. Are you ready for a world? Are you ready for a college football where Deion Sanders has his team in playoff contention rather than just the generic conversation? For many of you, the answer is regrettably no. They're watching us in Lebanon, Tennessee, Billings, Montana, Sugarland, Texas. Thank you guys so much. I have got to very quickly put in my password, and there, I'm back. I'm just checking out the live chat because I periodically have to go over here and say hi, so that you do in fact know that we're live. And I also move my mouth away from the mic when I do that, so you can barely hear me. I apologize. All right, let's move on. I have got several different directions to go here. Yeah, let's do this. Okay, sip from the chalice, and then I got a question for you about a certain team. We kind of talked about them on the show already, but we're going to revisit it. Strong. Strong, mysterious liquid in the chalice tonight. Non-alcoholic, but strong. Colin, give me the tweet. The tweet, so full disclosure, that's about Oregon, by the way. A lot of you tweet us stuff or ask me questions via Twitter, and a lot of you send it to me like 2 weeks prior, and all of a sudden you'll see it pop up on the show. And it's not because I didn't see it until then. Is because we know that, hey, if I'm already talking about this one thing a lot in tonight's show, let's just save this, especially if it's evergreen, which this was. So I got this from Duckworth up in Eugene, Oregon. And he said, hey, can Oregon win the Big Ten in their first year in the conference? Now, the obvious answer here is yes, of course they can. But I know my social circle, and some of you, are going to come at me as soon as I get off air, and you're going to give me every reason why you don't think they will. And I'm going to have one response typed out. I'm just going to copy and paste it. And I'm going to say, he asked, can they, not will they? This is March. No sane person is predicting conference outcomes in March. But I will tell you, yes, they can win it. So my advice, if your take is no, Oregon can't win the Big Ten, just take the O off the helmet for a second. Just remove the green and the yellow and all the flashy uniforms and just look at them as a data set. Look at them as a set of numbers. Look at them as a roster and ask yourself, in the past, self, what has it taken to win the Big Ten? What will it take this year to win the Big Ten? And do they have it? You need pretty high-level quarterback play and really good decision-making. They just brought in a couple of quarterbacks, and especially Dylan Gabriel, who last year, 30-6 touchdown to INT ratio. Also had 12 rushing touchdowns. About a 70% completion guy last year. Career is now culminating with a final season at Oregon. They're going to have the quarterback play. Will Stein's one of the best offensive coordinators in America. Very, very young. So a lot of people are still in the wait and see mode. I'm not. I'm sold on him. So they're going to have that. Also, you need plus to great offensive line play. When I say plus, like I don't mean plus as in addition to. I mean plus graded to elite offensive line play. They got both their offensive tackles back, and both of them will probably be all 10 caliber, or all Big Ten caliber guys. They got both offensive tackles back. They're probably good at center. I think the kid who played in the bowl game will be good for them. And they have addressed interior offensive line via the portal the last two cycles. So I think they'll be good there. I also think they have stacked the defensive line the last two portal and especially recruiting classes with really, really good versatility and depth. Lines of scrimmage will be among the best in the Big Ten. Quarterback will be among the best in the Big Ten. They went and grabbed 2 4-star corners from the portal. They got Evan Stewart at wide receiver from Texas A&M. How am I supposed to look at that and say, nope, can't win the Big Ten? Of course they can. If you don't believe that, what if I told you they have the 4th best odds to win the national title this year? And they're behind one Big Ten school. So it's Georgia, it's Ohio State, it's Texas, then it's Oregon. Oregon's got better national title odds than Bama, LSU, Ole Miss, Michigan, Penn State, Notre Dame, and Florida State. Yes, they can win the Big Ten. Of course they can win the Big Ten. Now, some of you doubt Dan Lanning because he hasn't won the big one. That's fine. All you can do is keep playing until you win one. I would also remind you, he's been a head coach for about 30 minutes now, still pretty young in his career out there. So not everyone who ended up being a title-winning coach won it his first or second year. But what you do have to have is you got to have players. As Mima always said, I'll remind you again, Joshua, having the ingredients in the kitchen does not guarantee a quality meal, but not having the ingredients does guarantee starvation. They are not going to starve out there. They're not going to lose because they don't have the players. So if you want to attribute that to other things, and this is future tense, we don't know what's going to happen this year, but if they don't win this year and they're not devastated by injury, it won't be because they didn't have the players. When Ohio State didn't win it last year, it's not because they didn't have the players, and it's not this full indictment on the coaching staff. Did they get it done? No. Doesn't mean you're terrible. Doesn't mean you're garbage. It means it's hard to win. It means other teams are allowed to try too. And when you stack these conferences like the Big Ten has done now, you're going to have fan bases critical because they don't win 2 Big Ten titles in 3 seasons. And it's just, it's the same in the SEC. It's going to be an unrealistic set of expectations now and moving forward. But Oregon's got the 2nd best odds to win the Big Ten this year, according to FanDuel. Yes, they can absolutely win the Big Ten. All right. Where did we get those odds? We got them from FanDuel. And I've told you, I think twice now, been having some meetings with our fine friends over at FanDuel, and I'm ultra excited to the point that I have nervous energy. That's why I'm playing with the pen here. Ultra excited about a couple of things that I hope we'll be able to do with them this fall. Let me give you a little hint about what I'm talking about. You may be new to the show, and if you are, you're going to have a great year because come football season, it's crazy around here. And one of the things that we do is we don't even care about the AP poll. We don't care much about the playoff rankings. We just put out our own power ratings on the show. And it's called the JP poll. Very cleverly named, I know. I appreciate it. But thus far, all I've been able to do is really tell you what my power ratings say, what we think the number should be on a neutral field, this and that. What I've never been able to do is have the power of the biggest sports book in America come in behind me and say, excuse me, we have a take on this. Wouldn't the JP poll be fascinating this fall if that were to happen? So anyway, in the meantime, you want to bet futures, you want to bet the Heisman, you want to do whatever, FanDuel is the place, the exclusive odds provider of Late Kick.
Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. All right, let's move it right along. Got a couple of more things to get to tonight. Actually, three things to get to. So, Colin, where did I see what I did. All right, I see what I did. You don't even have to tell me. Let's go talk about Billy Napier for just a second. gathering my thoughts. Okay. Jackson down in Gainesville said, what does Billy Napier have to do to keep his job? Well, like everyone else, Jackson, he's got to win. He's got to win. Now, as you know, I don't delve much into the extremes. A lot of folks have already sold Billy Napier and they've given up on him. I'm not there, but I do think everyone, including him, knows that it is a show-me year. And they're going to have to do it with the toughest schedule in the country. So that we know, and that'll be thrown in your face a million times before they kick it off. Where is he? He's 11-14 through 2 years as Florida's head coach. He's 6-10 in the SEC after being 40-12 at Louisiana. So the obvious fear in the room is, what if his skill set just doesn't translate to this level? What if he was good enough for the G5, but he's got not good enough for the SEC? Heard it a million times. We just heard Auburn have to go through that with Brian Harsin. They're saying the same things about Napier right now. He's 1-5 against Georgia and Tennessee and FSU. Yeah, okay, so there's no opinion there. That's just fact. Now, let's get into the opinion of it. Some people have taken that and they've said, hey, 2 years in, like we'll give benefit of the doubt year one. 2 years in, didn't look a whole lot better last year. We're still below 500. A lot of the procedural stuff was just a mess. Special teams, a mess. You know, the hallmarks of not having things ratcheted up from a discipline standpoint, a lot of that was the biggest problem with Florida last year. So what he has to do this fall, I don't necessarily know if it's a specific number of wins that he has to have, but I'll tell you this. This year is 100% him. And Napier the other day at his press conference down at Florida, their opening spring practice, he said, I will tell you that for the first time, I think all of our systems are built. We've had quite a bit of change over the last couple of years. They have. And now he's had more staff churn. Defensively, specifically, they overhauled some things. They changed positions. But that's an admittance there. Even if you don't buy that it took this long, okay, that notwithstanding, Napier's telling you himself, this is my team. This year, it's my team. It reflects me. Vast majority of the roster are players that he brought in. Okay, he's telling you his philosophies are in place, and they've even been able to make some staff changes. So the whole point there is you're looking at a conveyor belt, and whatever comes out of the oven on that conveyor belt, that's Billy Napier. There is no more excuse of, I inherited this or I had to go through that, which is viable sometimes. That happens. And every situation is unique. And I'm not here to tell you otherwise. I'm here to tell you in year three, you don't get to say that stuff. So their over-under win total is 5.5 this year. That's partly because their roster does not match other schools in the SEC at the premier level, but it's also because they have a nightmare schedule this year. So I got my own philosophy on this. I think Napier's a really good coach. There's two schools of thought here. I could just be wrong about that. It could be that his ceiling was succeeding at the G5 level. Like, that's possible. There's another possibility, though, that I'm right that he's a good coach,
and he got himself in a situation where they got stuck in the mud out of the gate, tires just spinning. It doesn't matter what that vehicle's capable of. If its tires are spinning, doesn't matter what's under the hood. Doesn't matter how pretty the paint job is. And in the real world, if your tire's spinning and you otherwise got a high-performance automobile that's just stuck in the ditch, well, you call your buddy, you get it out of the ditch, and peel rubber, you're off. That doesn't happen in college football. You don't have time to call your buddy. You don't have time to say, hey, I need a couple of years. Hold on, just check back with me in 2026. You're unemployed long before then. So there is a world where Napier's a good coach, didn't press all the right buttons when he got there, then the next couple of years are spent undoing some of the bad decisions out of the gate. Well, that's it. That's it. That's all they give you. And so sometimes guys take jobs and they don't make the right calls at the outset. And they're good enough to win, but they don't make the right calls. They don't hire the right way. They don't install the right way. They don't set the right culture. And it results in tire spinning a little bit. And there is not Frank Beamer amounts of patience a la his time at Virginia Tech. They gave him over half a decade before he ever won more than six or seven games. Well, they're not going to give Billy Napier that. So what does he have to do this year? You know, if you told me they're going 6-6 this year, my guess is that's not good enough. If they go 6-6 and every loss is by, you know, one possession, I don't know that that makes any difference, but I would know if you're competitive to within a touchdown with every game they got to play this year, whether you win 10 or you win 6, that's not easy. That's not easy to do. So got a long time to talk about that, but criticism's valid. I'm not hating on Florida fans if they're critical of this. You guys invest. You guys do what's asked of you. You ought to have high expectations. I got no problem whatsoever with that. I don't think Billy Napier does. I think it bothers family and friends maybe a lot more than it does the guy himself. And you know what? Maybe we'll talk to Billy Napier in the not-too-distant future about that. So forget about what I say about it. Maybe we'll get him on the record about it. All right, let's move on. Now, Colin, we get back on track. Like a true professional, Colin does not even send up a smoke signal. Does not have to jump in the ear. We just synergy, baby. Just work it. We talked about quarterbacks the other night, and I had one of you ask, are you going to do that with every position group? And then I went and said, hey, we got someone asking about running backs. Let's do it. Chef hit us up from College Station and said, who has the best running back rooms in the country? Now, here's what I'm doing. I'm doing basically a pre-spring version of this. Spring ball has started, but not everywhere. So I got four of them I've got my eye on. I'm going to give you a more definitive list probably after spring ball when I see what the portal did. But Ohio State's at the top of the list. I think Ohio State's got the best running back room in the country this year. Trevion Henderson, when he got close to healthy at the end of last year, looked like the best back in the country. And he has that ability. And even with Quinshon Judkins transferring in, let me be clear, a healthy Trevion Henderson's the best they got. And he ought to be the feature back up there. So Judkins is no joke and one of the best in the country in his own right. But Trevion Henderson is a monster when he's healthy. Judkins last year, 4.3 yards per carry. I think Henderson got nearly 1,000 yards last year and didn't even play in every game. And he's about a 6 yards per carry guy. So that 1-2 is why I am not exactly chewing my fingernails to the nubs worrying about, you know, whether Will Howard can throw for 4,000 yards. Maybe he doesn't need to for them to win every game. I'm going to stay in the Big Ten for a second because Penn State's got to be, to me, on this list. Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, 4.5 and 5.2 yards per carry respectively with about 14 touchdowns last year. There's no need to estimate. They just had 14. It wasn't about 14. It's not like guessing temperature. But my point is, I still think there is another collective gear that running back room can hit. And a lot of it will have to do with the new offensive coordinator coming in from Kansas. Got one of the best in the business running that room in Jawan Sider. So I'm a big believer in both of those guys. I think Georgia will end up being on this list. And unlike these other two, Georgia doesn't have a household name there that the country knows. Most of you may not even know Trevor Etienne has transferred to Georgia, but he was at Florida last year, which, by the way, just like good on Georgia for getting him. The concept of transferring from one rival school to another is something that when I'm elected college football commissioner, I may just ban it, but it's not illegal. So wave the red and black pom-pom. It feels a little gross to me. But now that he's in Athens, he is going to be a monster this fall. And they hadn't had a 1,000-yard rusher, I think, since 2019. He will be one if he's healthy this fall. Trevor Etienne was good at Florida, can be great at Georgia, and keep in mind the offensive line he's going to play behind. And then when we're talking about the room at Georgia, they also signed 2 4-star backs and a high 3-star back this past cycle, at least one of whom will probably play significant downs for them. And look, if they go through spring and they realize we want to build a little more depth here, freshmen maybe not quite where we want them, they'll just go get one out of the portal. So I think Georgia's room will be really good this fall. Alabama's room is going to be really good this fall. I think it was the Rose Bowl against Michigan when Bama finally did what I was sitting there waiting on them to do all year, and that is put Justice Haynes in the game. Like, Justice Haynes, you kept hearing things about him at practice, true freshman. And, yeah, you got Roydell Williams there and Jam Miller, and Jam Miller had a really good year last year. But, man, in a loss, Justice Haynes is in there. He looked a little bit different. That was like when Mark Ingram first came to Alabama, and they had, like, Glenn Coffey there and Terry Grant. It was like holdovers from a previous regime, the best of the previous regime. But then when the first of the Nick Saban recruiting classes started to emerge, you're like, whoa, those guys look kind of different. Well, Justice Haynes steps on the field and just looked a little different. I think he may be their featured back this year. And if he's not, it's because Jam Miller has stepped up, or Richard Young. They signed a couple of 4-star kids this class. Richard Young was a high 4-star from the last class. They got plenty of depth and talent there. And a new guy taking over that room, got a whole new coaching staff, obviously. So those are 4 programs that I have my eye on. Not shocking, they're 4 of the best talent acquirers in college football. But I wanted to end the show tonight by looking at something that I don't talk a whole lot about, and that is the Heisman Trophy. Now, we talk about it when someone boycotts it, but I haven't spoken at great length about the market for the Heisman this fall. But I saw one more question, and I did want to get to it. Michael from Fairfield, Illinois, hit me and said, with all the weapons around him, could Jackson Dart win the Heisman this year? Not only could he, I think he's the best spring value play. If I go over to FanDuel and I'm looking at the odds, Jackson Dart, I think, is tied for 5th right now. And let's just put it together. Okay, let me walk you through why I've already made a move on this financially. What is your perception of Ole Miss? I like to do this exercise from time to time. Think about Ole Miss last year. What was your perception of them? I think most people's answer to that is Lane Kiffin, high octane, throw the ball all over the place, and it wasn't remotely accurate. Last year, they ran the ball 57% of the time, threw the ball 43% of the time. It was a heavy run-based offense, and that includes the quarterback position, but it was a heavy run-based offense. I don't think that'll be the case this year. They were 83rd in third down conversion percentage last year. Red zone was not off the charts great. Quinshon Judkins transferred. He's gone. And not a soul in Oxford, Mississippi openly wept for it, which was a signal. But I don't care about what fans thought about it as much as I cared what Jackson Dart thought about it. Because I was paying attention. I don't think I talked about it on the show, but I was paying attention. When Judkins threw up the deuces and headed to Columbus, Ohio, a lot of his teammates didn't seem too upset about it. Some of them seemed relieved, outright celebratory. Jackson Dart was one of them. Now, you make of that whatever you want to make of it. That's an extremely talented player, one of the best in America at his position, and was a workhorse for them last year. And yet the locker room kind of smirked and grinned when he left. May come back to bite you, or it may be a sign that addition by subtraction, even subtraction that talented, was thought to be the play there. My bet is that when you have a running back talent of that caliber walk out, even if his backup is named Ulysses and will be good in his own right this fall, and you have the wide receiver stable that they have, my expectation is Jackson Dart's going to throw the ball a lot more. And yards after catch will be one of the most important stats to follow if I'm betting on him to win the Heisman, because they probably go pre-spring 7 to 8 deep in the receiver room with guys I would trust in the SEC. Lane Kiffin may disagree with me on that, but you develop them the right way there. They got 7 or 8, I think, that they can go count on to play winning football for them, or we'll be able to say that by this fall. Now, will they keep them all? They've been really, really good in NIL, really committed to it, so I don't have any reason to believe they won't. And also, if they start off this fall and they're winning, and Jackson Dart has some Heisman hype around his name, dude, the marketing apparatus is going to be in place. The head coach there is a marketing apparatus. It may rub some of you the wrong way, but that doesn't tamp down what I'm saying to be true. So Jackson Dart loses an All-American caliber running back, has racehorse after racehorse at wide receiver, is deeply entrenched as third season now as quarterback there in the same system. All signs to me point to a really big fall. And if it starts rolling now, it's also going to be combined with Ole Miss maybe making a run at the SEC championship game, which will be the, you know, the team high-profile version of what normally is needed to be a contender for the Heisman Trophy. So, fifth best odds right now at FanDuel to win the Heisman. I think those odds will get a little shorter. I think there'll be some money coming on Jackson Dart. So I just tried to beat the rush. Thank you guys so much for watching. We'll have the Late Kick Extra podcast coming your way in the podcast feed on Tuesday. Remember, that's different than what you're seeing on YouTube. It'll be podcast only, and it's really fun, a little bit looser, only about 80% college football, and we delve into all sorts of other unmentionable things there. Family friendly, of course, but we have some fun. And then we'll be back same time Thursday night, Late Kick Live. Appreciate you guys so much. At Late Kick Josh on all the socials. For Director Colin, for Interim Producer Belchie, Bradley the Associate jumped and touched the roof today. We're so proud of him. I'm Josh Bate. Have a great start to your week, and God bless. Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.